One of the great mysteries of the Korach story is how he was so successful at gathering so much broad support for his cause. We understand quite well what his agenda was, what he stood to gain if he'd be successful. He'd become the new leader. He'd have an elevated status. We could understand what would drive him to challenge Moshe. But what drove, what convinced so many other people to join the cause, what turned out to be such a lost cause, when even from the beginning they had nothing to gain? There was no personal benefit. What's the difference if Moshe's the leader or Korach's the leader? How would they have benefited? And therefore, why would they follow him in such a drastic rebellion, which they had to know at least possibly, if not likely, would end in disaster as it did? Why did so many people follow him? Evidently, Korach had some very strong arguments that he was able to use to persuade and manipulate people into following him. And I think that the Medrash is very sensitive to this unspoken question. And I think they offer two models, two different arguments that Korach suggested and used to persuade the people and to manipulate them, which are not necessarily arguing with each other, but I think really complement each other, because I think that not only were these two perhaps ways that Korach used to confront Moshe, but I think historically, and even in our current day, one or both of these sometimes are still used and have always been used to challenge legitimate rabbinic and halachic leadership. The first is the one that's most well known to us. Rashi quotes it from the Medrash Tanchuma at the beginning of our parsha, challenging Moshe as the halachic arbiter, as the interpreter of halacha, as the posek. After all, Moshe's psukim are so ridiculous, they're illogical, they're counterintuitive, they can't be trusted. Moshe thinks that if you have a talis that's completely tcheles, it still needs an extra string of tcheles tzitzis. How ridiculous is that? If one string works to exempt an entire garment, well, if the whole garment already has tchelos, why would you need another string? It doesn't make any sense. Similarly, although Rashi doesn't quote it, but the Medrash mentions the other case of a house full of svarim. Do you need a mezuzah? Moshe says yes, which is the halacha. And again, they ridicule him. Mezuzah, which only has two little sections of the Torah in it, that works to exempt an entire house. But if the house is already full with full Sifrei Torah, why would you need, what are you gaining by putting a few extra things on the doorpost? It makes no sense. This is the first type of argument, the one that we're more familiar with, that Korach makes. And I think, you know, over the years, over the centuries, over Jewish history, has reared its ugly head more than once, which is to challenge the rabbinic leadership from the position of halacha, that their halacha is not right, the halacha is not fair, we can't trust their decisions, we can't just trust their psukim. And it all starts and all goes back with Korach and his attack on Moshe as a halachic leader and a posek and rabbinic arbiter, so to speak, that we see here in this famous Rashi and Medrash. However, there's another fascinating answer that the Medrash gives to this question, which I think is not as well known because it's not in the Medrash on our Parsha or Rashi. It's in fact in a Medrash in Tehillim, Mizmor Aleph Perek Tes Vav. And there, the Medrash describes the following scenario. It says that Korach gathered everyone there, and he said, this is why, you know, we have to rebel against Moshe. Look what kind of person and leader he is. And he describes that there was a certain widow in his neighborhood. Her husband had died, and she had two little girls, two orphans. And she barely eked out a living from a modest field, which she tried to harvest and plant and get food from. But Korach describes how each step of the way, Moshe interferes, and Moshe gives her a hard time. When she's plowing, he's bothering her that maybe she's not plowing right with an ox and a donkey, and maybe that's Kilai Behema. When she's ready to plant, he's bothering her about that, and, you know, don't forget to give certain gifts to the poor, et cetera, et cetera. And then when she finally has the harvest, you know, he comes over and says, remember, ahem, ahem, the Kohen, the Levi, Truma and Meiser, you know, and the Medrash certainly conveys the idea, the impression that, you know, Moshe was coming to tell her these halachos to remind her about Truma and Meiser so that she would then give it all to him. She's so frustrated, Korach tells the people, that she sold her field, she just got some sheep, she figured she'll make a living from the sheep, she'll use the wool of the sheep to make clothing for her children, the milk and any children that the sheep give birth to sell for money. And even then it's a problem because Aaron is bothering her and says, you know, you can't just shear the wool yourself. Rashi says, the first shearings go to me, the Kohen, and the firstborn, the Bechor Behema, also you have to give to me. And the Medrash concludes that Korach describes, v'hinicha bocha im shtei benoseha. When Moshe and Aaron were done with this woman, she just was left to cry. She was so upset. It was so terrible. And then Korach goes in for the final punch. And he says, you know, if this is what they did to her, you know, this is what they could do to all of us. And kulhan osin the tolin ba'akadosh baruch hu. Not only will they do it to all of us, but just like they took advantage of this woman and gave her such a hard time, constantly hiding behind, using the halachos, they'll do the same to us. It's not enough that they will take advantage of us, but they'll tolin ba'akadosh baruch hu. They'll hide behind God. They'll use the halacha for their own personal aggrandizement against us, like they did against this woman. And here we have not just a different story, it's different than the story of the tzitzis or the Torah, but a completely different type or category of argumentation. And this we learn here, not only that Korach is the storyteller, the consummate manipulative politician, you know, telling tales of single women and widows and poverty-stricken, you know, single mothers, etc., all to, you know, successfully arouse anger and manipulate emotion, which Korach was obviously good at. But I think the larger point is that Korach is giving a second type of argument, not against Moshe the posek, or, you know, the arbiter, and so to speak, ben adam le-makom, but rather Moshe the person. He's a bad person. The ben adam le-chavero, the social justice argument, as it might be called now, that this is a leader who's an ivory tower leader. He's out of touch at best, at worst, perhaps even corrupt. And the people, they're, again, at best, not sensitive to the needs of the poor, to the widow, to the orphan, to the poverty-stricken. And perhaps at worst, they're enriching themselves on the back of the lower class, of the underclass. And after all, look what Moshe did to this woman, and he cloaks it in religious argument, but really it's just taking advantage of the poor. And just, you know, at best case scenario, he is out of touch, and at worst, he is corrupt. And this is something which, again, we see throughout history, and unfortunately, even in our very day, where leaders are attacked, not for their halachic expertise always, but sometimes for their basic moral integrity and how they are taken advantage of. And of course, like every good lie, it starts with a certain amount of truth, because you need both, not only good halacha, but good midos. But often, as the case with Moshe, the attacks are off base.